This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis, Scoop. Jonathan Dornbush, Charmed, and sure. Dan Stapleton.
Oop.
And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about Capcom's plans on the Switch. We're going to talk about, what else are we going to talk about? VR games. That's coming up a little bit later on the show. But first, has Nintendo gone too far?
Probably.
Dun, dun, yeah. Dun.
Has Nintendo, more specifically, has Nintendo taken Amiibo exclusives too far?
Just look at Pear's shelf. No, of course. Well,
yeah, I don't know if he's posted a photo of it, but Pear,
like a video panning across the entire thing. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I like how people used to compliment me on my Amiibo collection, and now
not
Pear
these
just,
days.
Pear's just showing me up 100%.
He won up to you. I don't know if you've seen the Amiibo exclusives for Metroid: Samus Returns. You guys caught this?
Yes.
Yes.
So there's four different exclusives from four different Amiibo.
That squishy Metroid.
Yeah, that's one of them. And they're actually kind of, I mean, they seem to be kind of significant elements to the game that it's kind of a bummer that if you don't have those Amiibo, you're going to miss out on.
The fusion mode difficulty.
Yeah, so the squishy Metroid gives you the fusion mode difficulty where Samus has her suit from Metroid Fusion. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of cool. But if you don't have that Metroid or that Amiibo, you miss out on that.
I wonder how much it actually changes the gameplay, though, or what the scale of that difficulty is. It is interesting that they would bar that behind an Amiibo, for sure. I'm just curious how big a change that actually brings.
All this is DLC that's tied to a physical item. Like, that's what the stuff is.
Yeah, but
so are you saying it's fine, or like does it not bother you? What's your opinion on it?
It bothers me when it's a significant feature of a game that's available at launch that they're, you know, charging extra for. Like, if it's something that makes a game better, like that isn't just skins. Like, I don't care about skins, but if it's like changing the gameplay in a significant way, it's like, yeah, that's annoying.
It feels pretty bad too, and this is coming from an Amiibo fan. I like Amiibo, own most of them. But you know, what if you don't care about Amiibo but you want fusion mode?
Yeah.
Like, you can't, like, I mean, you don't have a choice. Like, you don't have an option to just buy it from the eShop or anything of that nature. You're forced to, you know, buy this physical thing that,
which is out of stock.
But
half
they
the time.
Often go out of stock, or, you know, if you just don't want it.
Yeah. I mean, Nintendo kind of did this with Breath of the Wild by locking the hard mode behind the season pass, right? You had to buy the season
pass. You can only
pass.
Get your wolf companion with the Wolf Link Amiibo.
Yeah.
You want to know what's funny? I don't know actually how many Amiibo, over 50. For a long time, I had all of them, and I've given up on that dream. But I have never, ever scanned an Amiibo in a game.
What?
You've never scanned it into the...
Hold on.
No.
How much Zelda have you played?
A lot. Yeah, 60
And you've
hours.
Never... Just like, why not just scan it? To drop in from the
just
sky?
Just do it.
Like, I hate that. Like, I refuse... Like, we had him around the office, and I refused to do it when I played Zelda, because it's cheating.
Sure, but just with his collection, I would have figured
What I get out of them is the collection of little physical figurines.
Okay.
If there was no scanning NFC functionality at all, I think most of them... There's some exceptions, but most of the build quality on them is pretty good.
Yeah.
As far as Nintendo collectibles go, they're on the cheap side if you wait and only buy them when they're in stock. And I think the build quality is good, and you know they're officially licensed. So for me, the NFC sort of scanning, get things in a game, that's not a part of the equation for me personally at all. But it's funny that some people buy them for the exact opposite reason.
Yeah.
They only buy them to unlock, you know, it's like, you know, in-game unlockables, like Dan was saying.
I get if it's not important to you, but they're there.
Yeah.
And you just have to tap them on your Switch, and this awesome treasure chest falls
from
the sky.
That makes the game worse.
Well, I mean, that's a different...
It actively makes it worse. I hate it.
I mean, sure, but the...
I think falling meat makes any game better.
You can quote me on that.
Yeah, that's a back-of-the-box quote, Nintendo.
The first thing you look for... Does this game have
in the
falling
bullet points.
Meat?
Falling meat? No, I don't want that. That's why Meat Boy is one of my favorite games ever.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's just a game all about falling meat.
It has a lot
in
of
general,
it.
I
what
think...
About, well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what if the meat's like, it's not falling, but it's there? Like,
it's
under a trash can in Ninja Turtles?
Or
if it's behind a wall
in
Castlevania? It's not falling.
That's good, but I'd prefer if it is affected by gravity somehow.
What if you have to pick up the meat and drop it yourself?
That I'll take that.
Okay. What game is that?
You could probably do that in like some.
I guess
bunch
in like
VR
Fallout. Pick up some
Skyrim.
Any Bethesda game, Job Simulator.
What about Wheels of Cheese?
Wheels of Cheese?
Yeah, Skyrim. I'm still thinking about Skyrim.
All right, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I mean, I just, despite being an Amiibo fan and saying that the endgame stuff's not important to me, I want to go on record as saying that I think this is bad.
Okay, so the fusion difficulty mode and the fusion suit is not the only thing that's locked behind Amiibo.
I think it's bad.
In Samus Returns. There's a new Samus Amiibo that launches alongside the game on September 15th. That figure unlocks an extra energy tank. As Dan would say, that's cheating. And it also unlocks an art gallery. So it's like, that should be in the game. I know, it should just be a nice little bonus because you bought the game.
I mean, they need to find some middle ground where, like, in 3 months or 6 months or something, these features come to everybody, or you at least have the option to buy them on your own. Like, some sort of option where I'm a big Metroid fan, I don't want to have a bunch of Amiibo around my house, but now I can't. And it's frustrating because that stuff, it's not like the Amiibo is downloading something, which I know that's like a mental block, but people have been talking about that with DLC for a decade, where all this DLC is a key to unlock what's already on my disc, which why is that different than actually downloading the assets off the internet? But it does feel different.
Yeah,
for sure.
I agree.
Like, it's in the game. It's in the game.
It's there.
And they're not letting people access it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be totally fine if they were just limiting this to cosmetics. It's like, okay, here's a character, scan that in. I get to play as that character, or he appears in the game in some capacity. This doesn't feel good.
Yeah, if the fusion suit didn't affect the difficulty, I'd be fine with that. But yeah.
So, counterpoint, they could be selling this stuff for $13 anyway, and you don't get an Amiibo.
I mean,
so for $13, I assume it's $13, you can get a pretty cool, squishy Metroid Amiibo, and you get an endgame bonus. They could have just been selling you the endgame bonus for $13.
Yep. And counterpoint,
this
stuff could just be in the game,
ugh,
since it's there anyway.
Man, this is complicated, Damon. I don't know.
The Zero Suit Samus Amiibo unlocks another energy tank and a sound test mode. You can't test the sounds unless you have that Amiibo. And finally, the classic Samus Amiibo unlocks a missile tank and concept art.
So I do think, I'm really going back and forth on this. Right? No, I mean, I just like, I'm of two minds.
Roller coaster of emotions.
Well, I do think it's neat. I think Amiibo are neat compared to other similar Toys to Life systems or even other like DLC dissemination systems, and that I already had my Metroid Amiibo. And, you know, I like it because it's cool. It's a cool thing to have on my shelf. But then if I'm into Nintendo games, it does different things in like 8 different Nintendo games.
Sure.
And so it's really, really cool that sometimes you buy an Amiibo and then, it becomes more valuable over time as more Nintendo games come out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so like, when Smash for Switch inevitably comes out, like, will the Smash Amiibo do something neat? Like,
Yeah.
You already own them.
Like. Yeah. I presume those two Smash Amiibo did something in Smash, and now they also do something in Metroid. Well, and that part's kind of cool.
They unlock a lot of the Mario Amiibo, like unlock things in Mario Kart. Like, you know, you didn't know that was going to happen when you bought those Amiibo before that game was even announced.
Like, yeah.
It just seems like a huge mess going forward because, like, you know, some things are going to work, some aren't. You're going to be mad that this one that you got you thought might do something in this game doesn't.
Did you see the Hey Pikmin amiibo integration?
No.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool how it unlocks every single amiibo, unlocks a little, like encyclopedia entry that's written from, I think, like, Olimar's perspective. And, like, he often, like, doesn't understand what the character is or what they mean. And they have these little jokes. Like, it's really pretty clever.
Yeah,
that one also has a cheat in it that just drops more Pikmin in whenever you need it.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Well, not for you. You can't make that call for other people. Looking through the comments on our news article on this story on IGN, the readers were not happy with all these Amiibo exclusives for Metroid. Samus Returns, and I have to admit, it doesn't sit very well with me.
I mean, there are rumors that the Switch, before we knew what the Switch was, that it was a tablet and, you know, a portable console, that it was going to be like it was going to be like an Amiibo system. Like, Amiibo came out and was such a big hit that it was just going to be some sort of, like, whole video game system that was the equivalent of, like, the Toys to Life digital portal, and the whole thing was going to orbit around Amiibo.
Yeah.
And the fact that they apparently dialed that back to where we are today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Well, Metroid Samus Returns is out September 15th, and the game, at least, is looking very cool.
I played it.
Yeah, me too.
And did you have fun?
No.
Oh, I did.
I'm being a little flippant. I'm actually, as a big Metroid fan, I wasn't particularly impressed, no. But, you know, sometimes those games take a while to unfurl.
Did you start out just right from the beginning of the game?
I mean, whatever the
demo
starts.
I think they had
starts,
us at the beginning, like, yeah. You played at Comic-Con.
Oh, that's
also,
right.
Yeah. I think they had us from largely the beginning of the game, pretty much.
Metroid 2 is the worst Metroid.
Yeah, but they're, I mean... I imagine they could rework it into something fun.
The melee counter they added is super fun. Yeah, when you get the hang of that is it's so satisfying.
I agree with that. Very satisfying feeling.
All right, well, sticking in the Nintendo wheelhouse, Capcom is planning to make more Switch games in the wake of Ultra Street Fighter II's success. When the Switch was first announced, that's Capcom's only game that they've brought to the Switch so far, a remake of Street Fighter II. But it has apparently sold, or Capcom says, it has made an excellent start and proved to be a smash hit. Wow. 450,000 units sold in Q1.
What?
Yeah.
That's so much.
Well, I mean, that was part of that was there weren't a lot of games to buy on the Switch.
Yeah, but I wonder. And it was $40.
Oh,
yeah. $40.
Street Fighter
and it's
2.
A fairly bare bones port of Street Fighter 2.
I would have never in a million years guessed that that's what it sold.
$40, $18 million.
Yeah, Capcom apparently also surprised.
Wow.
I guarantee you they did not spend $18 million making that game. So that worked out well for them. But at least the good news is, you know, that game also wasn't received very well, at least critically. I think it has like a 66 on Metacritic.
Doesn't matter.
Yep. But the good news is now we should be getting more Capcom games, which makes me wonder what Capcom games would we like to see on Switch? I would say the Mega Man Legacy collections are obvious choices.
And yeah, for sure.
Absurd that they have not been announced for the platform yet.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that should be on Virtual Console, but which the Switch doesn't have.
Yeah, but they're getting retail releases on other platforms.
Legacy Collection has little bonuses and, you know, museum-type things that are pretty neat.
Give me a new Beautiful Joe.
I was going to say a Beautiful
that
Joe
with Platinum
collection. I don't know if they've ever collected. There were the main ones, 1 and 2, and then some as a spinoff on DS.
You mean another platform for Resident Evil 4?
Yep, I can bring back. And the Resident Evil remake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the Resident Evil remakes.
And what's that?
Dino Crisis.
There's
Dino Crisis Collection.
Billy Hatcher.
Oh, dang.
Wait, which one's Billy Hatcher?
That was on the GameCube. When, yeah.
I don't think
it was like
a
platforming sort of game, I think.
Is it good?
Yeah. It was a 3D platformer. Yeah, it was fine. It was good.
Yeah.
It's a 7 out of 10.
We need an Okami HD. On that one. That'd be really fun to play. And then I'll always say this whenever we're talking about Capcom games, Rival Schools. Time to dust off Rival Schools and bring it back.
I guess it's in some of the old zombie games,
Dead Rising.
Dead Rising, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
seeing some of like the first three of those on there would be cool. They put out a collection of that.
Yeah, for sure.
First two, I guess.
So you guys are surprised as I was too, to hear that Street Fighter sold so well on Switch. Is it because, are people still just playing anything on Switch? They're still just, they're so hungry for...
I think they're still in that mode. That's why ARMS sold over a million copies.
And over the weekend, I saw a lot of people talking about how they were playing the new Namco Museum Collection, which
I saw a lot. I was surprised.
There's nothing, those are classic games, but they're nothing new. I'm just surprised by how many people are like tweeting about their playing.
Well, I've said before that the form factor of the Switch, you know, like if I own a game on Steam, I'm sort of like, that's it. Like the PC is an eternal evergreen platform.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, I'm not going to buy that game again. Like I have the Steam version. But Switch sort of makes me say, maybe I do. Like maybe I want Overcooked on Steam and on Switch. Like maybe I want this on Steam and on Switch. So
and for purposes of playing mobily, yeah. It's like that makes a lot of sense because like that's something the PC cannot do.
Yeah. So that's maybe part of it. Like that game, once you build a computer or you do a lot of your gaming on PC, it takes some of the shine off of the Xbox and PS4 because they offer a very similar play experience. But with Switch, now you have to make a choice.
Yeah.
Do I want the Switch version or maybe the PC version?
Yeah.
I think Switch and PC, that's the dream team double console.
That's the dream team?
I forget exact release date, but Street Fighter came before ARMS also, right? Release date was?
Yeah.
I believe, so that was sort of the first fighting game on the
May.
System.
Was it May? Does that sound right?
Sounds vaguely.
It was earlier.
Yeah, so it was the first fighting game to do so. I'm sure a lot of people who picked up a Switch want to play a fighting game. They obviously know Street Fighter. It was an older one, so maybe older fans on Switch also would have immediately jumped for it. I can see that for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Can I share a pet peeve with you about the Switch?
Yep.
I like the Switch.
Yep.
Love the Switch. You might even go so far as to say, love the Switch.
Okay.
It's not even a problem with the console, but just the way games are sold now. I can buy a physical, like I can buy Splatoon 2, $48 on Amazon, $48 at Best Buy Gamers Club, like that's sort of the price for a new game.
Yeah.
But that's only for a physical copy. Mm-hmm. And I want to go digital only with my Switch.
Why is this a pet peeve about the Switch?
Well, just like it's
ecosystem of this.
Just as a result of the way video games work in 2017, I ended up just not buying Splatoon 2 because I don't want to pay $12 more to get it digitally than physically. That doesn't feel right.
But it's the same on PS4 and Xbox One.
But I don't care about having physical PS4 or Xbox One discs. Since the Switch is a portable console, I don't ever want to be messing around with Switch carts. I want to go digital only.
Okay. Okay.
But since the games are more digitally than they are physically, which already feels bad and weird.
Yes.
But in the case of the Switch specifically, there's a reason to go digital only. As a result, I didn't buy ARMS and I didn't buy Splatoon because I just said, I don't want to pay $12 more for the convenience of just having this thing on my Switch micro SD card all the time.
How do they rationalize that, especially on the Switch where the physical media is more expensive than a disc?
Well,
them to make.
I mean, Nintendo sets the MSRP is $60, so they sell the digital version for $60, and it's really just Amazon and Best Buy trying to butt heads.
They're trying.
Yeah, that's them.
Cutting into their own profit.
Also, for just when you pre-order it, or is that even after launch still?
I think it's within 2 weeks of launch.
It's 2 weeks after launch, any new game's $48.
Okay.
It's 20% off with your Prime membership. So it just works out to be $48, which is cool.
And so now I'm torn between spending a little bit more money or getting a physical version, and as a result, two Switch games in a row that I'm interested in and want to play. I've skipped.
Yeah. I don't know when that gets resolved. Maybe when physical goes away forever. I don't know what the answer is, which isn't happening anytime soon, I don't think.
I've written a letter to the president about it.
Okay, good, good.
Which one?
It's called the cops.
Obama.
Okay.
Called the Omega Cops. Now, a quick correction on last week's episode.
Uh-oh.
The Vita Defense Force was activated.
you got my emails?
When I said the Switch had outsold the Vita.
Yeah.
When I now realize that that's not true yet. So here's what happened. I wanted to know like where we learned the Switch had sold 4.7 million copies. I wanted to know that where that sat in
6.1, whatever it was,
with all console sales. So I did some hard hitting investigative journalism and I Googled list of best selling consoles, and that got me this nice Wikipedia page. And the Switch was right there above the Vita. So that's where I was getting that from. The Wikipedia recognizes the Vita as having sold around 4 million copies because that was the last time Sony gave official data, and that was back in like 2012 or 13, and they have not released any official sales data on the Vita since. So, yes, obviously it sold more than that. There have been some estimates from reputable sources like Forbes that put it around 10 million. But the truth is, we don't know for sure exactly how much it sold because Sony does not want us to know.
It's also totally fair to say that the Switch has sold many more over the same period of time.
What do you mean? Like the same? Well, since March.
Well, no, since
in its first 6 months or 5 months of availability. It's
in terms of
significantly outsold the Vita in its first 5 months.
Yeah. So the Vita had sold 4 million copies as of 2012 or 13. Sure, I think there's a few more million in there probably, but we don't know exactly where it fits, unfortunately.
All off the hounds.
Yep. If you want to know exactly where the Vita stands with other consoles, take that up with Sony.
Not Wikipedia.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Cody from Fort Lauderdale, Florida did. And he says, "Dear Omega Cops, long-time listener, not my first-time email. I emailed GameScoop years back drunkenly, which luckily you had the wisdom not to read on air. Thank you. I write today with the question I'm sure many other have been wondering as well. Why does IGN seem to ignore VR gaming? Several IGN staffers have said that they don't believe it's a fad, but it's just not fully ripe yet. But IGN seems to completely ignore wonderful titles like Robo Recall, Mage's Tale, and Lone Echo / Echo Arena. All of these are AAA titles made from major developers, yet seem to get no love on IGN. The VR community is rapidly expanding with major sales of headsets and lower barrier entry technology, paving the way for more people to get in. Thoughts?
I reviewed Robo Recall. I gave it an 85, I think. It's a very good game.
There you go.
Great game. And my Lone Echo review will be up by the time this show is.
There you go.
So we're not ignoring it. It's just there are a lot of games. There are just too many games. So in order to not ignore a VR game, we have to ignore something else is what it boils down to.
Yeah.
So there, we only have so many hands. We only have so many sets of eyes. And not everybody here has a VR headset, so it's and we have a few shared ones, but even getting them swapped around and set up is kind of an ordeal.
Yeah.
So people are just a little bit less eager to jump on those, and like honestly, a lot of them don't do nearly as much traffic as a game for which there is a broader install base.
Yeah.
More people are interested in a conventional game, that might be smaller than a cool VR game, even though we like them. But I do them because I like those games. I like to dabble in those. So
I would say, quality aside, these games are all like new IPs. It's not like Fallout VR. GTA VR.
Right. When there is a big tie-in, we try and cover that because we know people are going to be interested in it based on the name alone. Like we did the Rick and Morty Virtual Rickality review, which actually ended up doing great traffic.
Yeah.
Surprisingly good.
I mean, I would say we review, Dan. I mean, we've reviewed almost all the high-profile VR games, or probably all of them, I would say.
Not all of them, but, because like sometimes they come out at the same time as other big things, and we just have our hands full.
I mean, it's a balancing act between, always at IGN, it's a balancing act between being a tastemaker and saying, look, here's a thing you need to be paying attention to. It's super rad. Check it out. But then also delivering to our audience what they're here for, and delivering them more on the big AAA games that we know they want to read about. And so, the reality is we are in the business of traffic, and we've seen a pattern for a year now of VR stories consistently don't have as much audience interest as other stories. We don't give up on the beat because VR is rad and more people need to know that it's rad. And so we're always going to review big high-profile VR games.
Even little ones that somebody on staff like gets into and says, hey, this is really cool, we should review this. Like that's there are multiple paths to getting reviewed on IGN.
We want to keep eating that drum.
Right.
But if
it sounded like you said eating that drum.
Eating that drum. That's the expression, right? I don't really understand it, but you gotta eat that drum.
It's the same thing though, even when we're covering them before review time with news and stuff. Obviously, like there was that big the Marvel VR game that was announced during D23. We covered, of course, the announcement of that. It's a huge Marvel property, but we may not cover the announcement of every VR game because we have noticed also our audience isn't always interested if it's not something recognizable to them.
And also the news that there's a Marvel VR game in the works did less traffic, fewer traffics than than the news that like Square Enix, is making a big Marvel game.
Yeah.
That's, that's not VR.
Right.
And
that will change increasingly as more headsets get out there and more people are interested. What should I buy for my PSVR, my Oculus, or what have you? But it's a process.
All right, this is John from Montana. He says, close to where Ubisoft got the inspiration for that secluded church in Far Cry 5.
In Montana?
Yeah.
Cool.
He says, hey, everyone. Just wanted to start off by saying I love the show. Look forward to it every week. Helps make the commute to work less dreadful. My question is about budgeting. I own all current consoles. We are a certified financial advisor, so this is a perfect question for us. He says, I own all current consoles, the PS4, Xbox One S, and a Switch. I love all my consoles, and I do a decent job of dividing my time. But my issue is budgeting for the current place I live in is becoming an issue, and I'm thinking I might need to get rid of one. The Switch is very convenient because it's portable. Xbox is what I play all my online games on because that's what my friends have, and the PS4 has those amazing console exclusives. So moving forward, I'm not sure which one I can give up. Any thoughts? This is definitely a conundrum.
Yeah, I think it's John from Montana. It's all about what is more important to you for your gaming habits. If it's more important to you to be able to play with your friends all the time, like if that is a large part of your life, keep the Xbox. If you want to be able to stay on those exclusives, if you're really heavy into storytelling in games, like the PS4 exclusives tend to lean towards.
You got to keep the Switch, though.
Yes.
So here's what I'm going to say, actually. I'm surprising myself with this answer. I was going to say, before when we came into the room, we sat down at the table.
Yeah.
You sent us a list of topics ahead of time. And I was going to recommend to John that he get rid of the Xbox One X. I think it's the weakest console of the three.
Excuse me.
It's got the
fewest. Get rid of the X.
It's got the fewest number of exclusives. You know, it just feels like the odd console out versus those three. But hearing a story, knowing that he plays those games with his friends, I'm going to say sell the Switch. Here's why.
Whoa.
I think you can recoup. You can probably sell it for basically what you bought it for. You can probably get that $300 back or very darn close to that $300 back. Yep. And then you can just get one again down the line. What are you going to miss? You're going to miss Mario in the fall. That'll feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to miss a few other games. But then, you know, late 2018, late 2019, scrape together the dough and rebuy the Switch for the same amount you sold it for. It'll probably have a $50 price drop by then.
Maybe he doesn't really like his friends though.
Yeah,
he might keeping him around.
Yeah, just for me, like that's my thing. Like I think the Switch can do something neither of the other two can.
Mm.
But the other two are very similar, except for exclusives here or there, or your friends. So, like for me, it would be either the Xbox or the PlayStation because there's so much overlap in those experiences. Depending on whether you play more multiplayer games with your friends or more exclusives by yourself, that's where the decision comes down to.
But again, and as someone that I love my Nintendo Switch. It's, I play it a lot. If you're someone that's, even though I like it a lot, there's no denying that the game releases seem few and far between. You know, we're getting one big-ish game a month, and really Mario is the only big game on the horizon. So do you want to pay $300?
Well, but he's already paid it.
Yeah, but he can get it back. I mean, he's talking about selling it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah. I think you can sell it. Rebuy it, and then get Mario and get some of the games that you missed on the cheap.
Yeah, and it also depends on how much he uses that portability. He's got a long commute to work, but if he's not on a train, he's not going to be doing that behind the wheel.
But just knowing that he's specifically trying to, it's for budget reasons.
Yeah.
I think that console you're going to get the most dollar. You're going to get the most bang. It's so hot right now. The Switch is.
It's true.
On Craigslist, it's probably going to go like nothing.
I don't know. This is really tough. Conundrum. I wonder if John could cut back on somewhere else in his budget.
Do you need food? Yeah. Is food that important?
Can we go ramen? I think they've made great strides with Top Ramen in the past few years.
You can donate blood,
plasma, platelets.
Platelets.
Yeah. There's other bodily fluids that can be donated. I hear that you can catch a pretty penny for.
Big urine market in Montana.
not really what I was thinking.
You can gamble.
Yep, that's another possibility. Not that we're endorsing that, but yeah. Good luck with your decision, John from Montana. This is Marty from Oregon.
Do you think it's Marty Sliva? Has he been in Oregon recently?
Actually,
I don't know where he is right now.
Within the last year, yeah.
Yeah, he took a vacation.
Let's just assume it's Marty Sliva from Oregon. He says, I love your show. Thanks, Marty, and look forward to it every week. Thanks for all you do. My wife is a non-gamer. Marty has a secret wife?
Whoa.
I mean, Marty has a secret wife.
Scoop. We know.
My wife is a non-gamer. Was a non-gamer. She never understood how I could spend my evenings in front of the PlayStation 4 and assumed the world of gaming was just not for her. That is, until I picked up a little game called Overwatch. Mm. At first, the changes in my wife were subtle. She's going through changes. She would sit next to me on the couch for a few minutes and ask a question or two about the characters. She wanted to know about the animated Overwatch short films and the different costume skins for each character. And then it happened.
Uh-oh.
She asked for the controller and played her first round of quick play as D.Va. Now, a year and a few months later, my wife is a full-on hardcore gamer. She plays so much that I never get to play anymore. In fact, now she's better at games than I am.
What?
She finishes games like The Witcher 3 and Horizon Zero Dawn within a few weeks, and Overwatch continues to be her go-to game in the downtime between major releases.
What a transformation.
I've been completely put in the doghouse when it comes to time on the PS4. To resolve this, I resorted to purchasing a Nintendo Switch to hold me over through the long nights when she's online, but it's not the same. So my next step is to get a second PS4 so we can play together. In one sense, it's been hard sharing the playtime, but I'm glad she can share in the joys of the gaming world. My question is this. If you had to pick one game to persuade a non-gaming friend to become a gamer, what game would you pick to win them over and why? I have to admit, I wouldn't think of Overwatch first.
No, yeah.
Just because, I mean, it is a dual stick
it's
shooter.
It's complex, it's fast, it's competitive. Like, yeah. They've got good matchmaking, though, so yeah. So you'll end up without, you know, a bunch of sharks in the tank.
Nintendogs.
Yeah. Nintendogs, yeah.
I mean, The Sims is a long-standing go-to for that, which I guess Sims 4 is going to come out on the consoles now.
Yeah.
Sims 4 is not as strong as 3. But so if you've got a PC and you can get 3, I would go that way. And like something like Cities Skylines, also a very good one. It depends on what kind of gamer you think they might want to be.
Yeah.
Diablo 3 is also a pretty good one for that.
Just mouses, just click on the
if
mouse.
You can click.
Or on gamepad.
Yeah, that's true. I usually think of the Telltale games.
Yeah.
It's good for onboarding, and of course stuff like Mario Kart. Pretty much anyone can pick up Mario Kart and have fun.
And I've said before, I think it was just on the show a week or two ago that I had a girlfriend that I was trying to get into games and showed her Mario 64 and showed her Mario Kart. None of that worked. And the game that stuck was Mortal Kombat, just because it was so goofy and violent and silly that like that's what she ended up liking, mashing buttons and punching and kicking, and then that led into other games. So it can be pretty hard to predict. So if you're trying if you're trying to get someone into gaming, I would just present them with a menu of options. And
I had a set of like 3 or 4 games back in New York that I would show to all of my friends in my circle who weren't gamers really that much. Mm. I would show them Journey.
Yeah.
I would show them Gone Home. Mm. I would show them Towerfall for something a little more complex, and I would also show them PT when that came out. Just put them through the gamut of emotions. But just in the idea of showing them sort of what storytelling could be in games, as well as just what like multiplayer mayhem could be. And Towerfall was easy enough for most of them to grasp.
Yeah.
Actually, VR is a pretty good way to introduce people to games as well, because it's something that they've just never seen before.
Yeah. We're all kind of on the same playing field.
Well, and they're a little bit simpler experiences.
Yeah, a lot of them are kind of tech demo-y. Super Hot VR is a great one.
I put
people in that, and they get right down to it pretty quickly.
And I find that actually camera manipulation is like one of the harder things for non-gamers to wrap their head. Like they can move a stick and move a character around, or fire a weapon or something like that. Yeah. But the idea of being control of your view angle is really confusing and disorienting for non-gamers.
Which is why the Lego games, I think, can be very friendly, because you have very limited camera control in those games. Maybe something like Mario 3D World 2 as well. Mm. Although that game is kind of locked on a console that didn't sell very well for now. this is Dorian of Idaho, which is a pretty epic name. It sounds very Game of Thrones sounding name. I'm Dorian of Idaho. I have a question that I would like to run by you guys. Does it make sense to buy any game or console on day one? While I completely understand making a purchase due to your excitement for a product, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense in the long run. For example, many big games will go through software patches to make the game a better experience and eventually come out with a Game of the Year edition that will have all the content for people who didn't jump on board from the get-go. I understand from a business perspective, this makes sense. It allows you to bring in people who are on the fence or just passed by it during release, but at the same time, it leaves the early adopters out in the cold. To me, it feels like there should be some incentive for day one buyers to buy on launch day and not feel buyer's remorse a year down the line. Mm. But I'd like to hear what you guys think.
I mean, the big part of the big reason to do it, besides just I really want to play that, is just to be able to be part of this conversation where a bunch of people are playing at once. You're not going to get that down the line. Like, some people will be playing. You can find communities online where you can talk about a game that you're playing concurrently. But if you really want to be part of the big, initial rush of people who are poking this game and discovering things in a game that nobody's ever played before, or not nobody, but the public hasn't played before. That's how you do it. And a lot of people get a big rush out of that.
Yeah, that's true.
And no one wanted to talk about The Witcher 3 with me earlier this year.
But he's totally right. Like, if you can wait, like if you don't care about being part of the conversation, if you can wait, you absolutely should, because it will get cheaper and they will get better.
Yep.
Yeah, like you're gonna have
the reality
better,
of gaming today.
A better experience for less money.
Yeah. Almost every major game will somehow get a Game of the Year edition a year later with all of the $40. DLC packed in. Yeah,
right, or $20
with everything you would want. And so, yeah, if that doesn't matter to you, I'm totally on the same page. If that conversation doesn't matter to you, absolutely wait.
Yeah, we all have gaming backlogs, right? So,
yeah.
It's not always necessary to get every game right when it comes out at launch. I would say, though, for story-driven games, there's a fear of spoilers, right? Sure. So
that's our culture now.
Yeah, I understand if you want to, like, you don't want to wait a year because surely at some point in some comment section you're going to see a spoiler for the game and be like, God damn it. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think about one of my experiences in terms of being part of the conversation. It was really The Witness last year, which is actually not a game that had, you know, a Game of the Year edition. So, although it did go on sale eventually. But the conversation around that game where anything that's going to give you something that's truly unexpected or that takes you in a direction you didn't know that's what that game was about or that's where it was going to lead you. And then it's really, really, it's so much fun to go in and talk about with your friends and compare notes and say, you know, did you go this way? I went that way. Like anything that really has an emphasis on exploration. That feeling can be really powerful and fun, and it's like almost as fun as playing the game itself.
Yeah,
I will say that multiplayer games, there's a very strong reason to get that early.
Sure.
On.
Yes.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
that community may not be there any.
Well, they may evaporate, or they may be really, really, like if you were to pick up Splatoon 2 in 2 months, are you just going to be matched with people that are pros? Like,
yep.
It's not hard to like pick up like Hearthstone now.
Yeah,
like,
it's not the same. It's like I think people are still playing Rainbow Six Siege.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and for me, like that's the most fun time to play a multiplayer game when nobody really knows what they're doing, and you see like a new strategy
that hasn't been optimized to hell yet.
Like. Right. But you see new things that you didn't expect, and that's surprising. And like even though it's like I died because I didn't know he could do that, like, you're learning along with everyone else, and like that's the prime moment. And that actually that window has gotten smaller and smaller as the internet.
Yeah,
has grown.
It's true.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel. I used to be really, really into Halo. And you know, when it first came out, it's just wide open. Go out, shoot your guns, have some fun. But then eventually people learn the maps and there's like a right way and a wrong way to play certain maps and certain strats that, you know, you kind of need to be playing the game this way to be playing it the right way. And like,
I don't want to do homework before I play a game.
Yeah. So that wide open when it's still like sort of blue ocean is a great feeling.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Matthew Bailey. Let the questioning begin.
Can you do you accumulate and spend money in this game?
I don't think so.
Money. All right. Is that all the Mario games?
Yeah.
I guess you don't
spend it.
You're doing the new one.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, I shouldn't be helping you.
Well, it's probably not Mario Odyssey anyway. should we do the time period questions?
Yeah. Was this game released before January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Okay. Should we do 3D versus 2D or platform?
You can even narrow it down to era if you want.
Go for it.
Was this released before January 1st,
1990? No.
90s game.
Hey.
Jonathan.
Hi. I was alive then.
Is it a 2D game or a 3D game?
Yep.
Is it a 3D game?
Let's say yes.
Was that like Tomba or Noah? Is this a 16-bit game?
I can't really answer that question. It's not. It doesn't apply.
Is this an arcade game?
No.
It's probably a PC game, would be my guess. Is it a PC game?
No.
Okay.
Oh.
What? Why are you doing this to us?
Wow.
I don't know what that means.
Hold on. By PC game, you mean was this released on PC?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm done. I still had consoles.
You were a console gamer back then.
Yeah, in the early 90s.
Okay, so we're looking at possibly
pseudo 3D.
Yes.
Not really a 16-bit game.
What is that? That one?
Damon's doing us dirty right now.
Yeah. I'm not doing anything. I'm honestly answering your questions.
I mean, I don't know. Okay, was this game released before January 1st, 1995?
Yes.
Okay.
90s. Not really 3D. So, man,
So what consoles are we playing with then at that point?
NES, only the Game Boy, Nintendo, Genesis.
On the 3D question, I came down more on the 3D side.
Okay.
Okay.
But 90s. But 90s. Not arcade. Consoles back then couldn't really do 3D. That's why I'm all tripped up right now.
I mean, like, you got like Star Fox, you've got Mega Man X.
Yeah.
Had like some.
Was this game released on a Sega platform?
No.
Okay. I was ruling out Sonic 3D Blast.
Yeah. Could still be Star Fox, but he said it wasn't really a 16-bit game.
Yeah. My answer was that question doesn't really apply to this game.
Okay.
But I don't know what to do with
aren't
that.
All SNES games 16-bit by definition?
No, because it wasn't an arcade game. I was thinking about some weird...
Wasn't arcade, wasn't Sega.
It was not an arcade game.
Yeah, no, so it's...
Yeah. Okay.
So it has to be Nintendo, are we assuming?
No. Was this game developed in Japan?
No.
Oh.
Ooh.
Okay.
We're getting more information, but...
I mean,
not
it could be like a 32X game or a Sega CD game.
Well, I asked if it was released on a Sega platform.
Oh, right. Well, I was just thinking about
that era.
Well, and not being a 16-bit. Traditional 16-bit game, it's like a Jaguar.
It could
be Tempest 2000.
Oof.
Was it released on a Nintendo system?
No.
Oh boy,
that's 10.
I bet you it's Tempest 2000.
Do you want to try to narrow it down by a genre then?
Well, yeah, I want to try to come up with a clever way to help us get there. Okay, well, wait. It wasn't released on a Sega console or a Nintendo console.
Yeah.
Is this an Atari Jaguar game?
No.
Oh, what else?
I mean, there's handhelds.
Should we? Yeah.
There was the Virtual Boy.
But we said, I guess Nintendo console.
Well, yeah, you're right. We did say Nintendo console.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the Turbo graphics and stuff like that. Turbo CD.
Hmm. I have no knowledge of those.
Yeah, that's outside my wheelhouse.
It's probably a board game.
A board game?
It's just regular ass Risk. We're in real trouble.
Oh, you're on your own. I'll just leave.
I know. I don't want to keep asking console because it's a trap, but maybe it's not. Not
if you want to,
not Jaguar or Sega or Nintendo or arcade.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Or PC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what question are we on?
11. I asked 11 questions.
Man.
I mean, so it's got to be a handheld game, right? Or TurboGrafx.
If it's TurboGrafx, I'm totally out. If it's Game Boy, I can.
Was Game Boy included when we said an
Nintendo? Yeah, so it's not a Game Boy or Game Gear.
Yeah. Okay,
so was this a TurboGrafx game?
No.
Does this game exist?
did you play it on a TI-82? What the hell?
What does that leave us with?
What does that leave us with?
Nothing. NES? No, because it's not Nintendo at all.
Something? Oh, man.
I mean, it leaves us with the Atari Lynx. Because we specifically said Jaguar and we specifically said TurboGrafx. It leaves us with the.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's outside my wheelhouse at that point.
What a day for Sam to be out.
Yeah. Should we try genre now? Do you want to go?
No.
No? You want to keep narrowing
it down?
Because
I don't have, that doesn't help me know what, console it's on. It was developed in America. No, not in Japan.
Not in Japan. Came out between 1990 and 95.
Was it developed in the United States?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so it eliminates anything from Rare or any of those weird French developers, Ubisoft, early Ubisoft.
Oof. I can't think of what other systems were around at the time because I didn't have any.
Yeah. We already asked it. It's not TurboGrafx. Is this a handheld game?
No.
This game does not exist.
Oof. Yeah.
This is a game that is played in your brain.
The game definitely exists.
home game, but not Sega or Nintendo or Jaguar or TurboGrafx.
Mm-hmm.
You're one of those little...
3DO. Like, But I feel like that was not, I mean, that must have been before 95.
One of those, if like, you want a Tiger
game. Yeah, it could be a Tiger Electronics 3D game, or it could be, but it's not a handheld game.
That's true.
Could be get the ball in the cup, that classic game.
This one?
Yeah.
Ball and cup?
Ball and cup.
kind of 3D.
I like 3DO.
If you want to ask it.
Do it.
What were the big high-profile 3DO games that were developed?
I mean, Fighters?
Well, okay, I don't even, is it a 3DO game?
No.
It's 15. The despair on Damon's face.
It's such.
I'm not despairing.
No, I know, just like for Justin, like the pain you felt for him.
It's such a trap. Asking what console is always a trap.
Yeah, we only have five left, so.
Usually it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually.
Usually we're not forgetting the one other console that came out in that time period.
I mean, it can't even be like a launch PS1 game because that was not 94. Or was it 94? I always think about the PS1 as being in 95.
It might have actually been 94.
I think it was fall of 95.
I don't remember exactly the year of that.
I may as well ask if it's on that platform. We've got nothing else to go.
Yeah.
Yes, man. And also, what were the...
What other platform do we have then?
Okay. All right. Okay. Is it a PS1 game?
No.
Yeah. Okay. I already knew it was.
I just want.
That's 16. Four questions left.
We are unlikely to win this.
Pretty far away.
Is the game developer still in business?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, it doesn't have to be. It's probably Activision or EA.
Yeah.
Naughty Dog was around that long.
Is this a sports game?
No.
Okay.
Two questions left. And one of them is a guess.
Is it an EA game?
No.
I don't know what.
Shot in the dark.
If you want to guess a game, you may.
Yeah, I don't even.
Or else I can reveal.
I give up.
The answer. Yeah. Released in 1994.
Okay.
Developed and published by Bungie.
Oh,
Mac.
Oh,
you're a real jerk.
Oh, man. This is.
Yeah, it's Marathon. Yeah.
Marathon.
Oh man.
Yes, it is true. I mean, I don't think I'm cheating you guys. It was not released on PC.
And it was eventually, but
I mean,
but not at that time. It took a long time.
I think it was like in 2001.
It is fair to say that it was not released.
Yeah,
like that. I don't like it one bit.
And it's not. It's like first person shooter, but not real 3D. If I'm correct about that, right? Not true 3D. In the same way like Doom.
Right. It's 3D, but with sprites.
Yeah.
I would absolutely call Doom a 3D game.
But it's not. They're not like rendering.
It's not. It's not
3D rendering.
Like, yeah, it's not.
Semantics
of
that aside, would that have helped us?
I mean, it's a first-person shooter.
Yeah,
there are polygons in Marathon because the maps are rendered.
I should have asked if you can see your character's hands.
I don't know if you can though.
You can.
You see a gun. You can see your hand too. I don't know if you can. Maybe.
Yeah. No, you definitely can. You can see a gloved hand.
I don't like it.
They released support for Xbox Live Arcade.
Yes.
I played a lot
of Marathon. I had a Mac at the
time. See, I was counting on you for this one, Dan.
When we say PC, what counts as a PC in your mind?
PC is a Windows PC.
Or is it a DOS, like a DOS? Like, is that like when, like...
A Microsoft-based PC, basically.
I mean...
That's what I want
to
know.
It's not just my mind. It's like this game wasn't released on PC.
PC is personal computer, Damon.
What's the Mac? Is the Mac a PC?
Mac is also personal. Don't be fooled by the commercials. Those are propaganda.
Damn it, Hodgman.
Yeah, damn it, Hodgman.
Yeah. Good suggestion. Good suggestion from Matthew Bailey. He says, I'm a massive fan of GameScoop. Most importantly, the 20 questions segment. I started listening about a year ago, but on a recent trip to France, went back through and listened to all of the 20 questions segments I could find. Ugh. Yeah, it's a good one.
The thing that makes me most angry about this is now that Sam's win record, his win percentage is just going to go through the roof.
To be fair, though, Sam wouldn't have been able. I know. Wouldn't have gotten
that's why I'm frustrated. Like, his stats are going to look so good now.
I thought Dan is the one that could have gotten there.
Even I don't think of the Mac as a gaming platform.
I know, but like there's this one, and wasn't there something else? Was like
We're changing the PC question to a computer game.
Yeah, that would work.
We should have asked
if it was a computer game. I would have said
yes. Yeah, PC. I'm taking this to the top.
Okay.
I'm going to file an official grievance.
Justin is going to call the cops.
With the commissioner. Okay. It's just you.
Yeah, I have a reviewer case and I deny. Marathon, 1994, Bungie's first game. And then I think after that, Microsoft bought Bungie.
Yeah.
Yes. It was considerably after that because they put out
a couple more Marathons.
Yeah, that's what happened. I think
Marathon
Microsoft
2 and 3.
Microsoft released it for PC after they bought Bungie.
And Myth. They also put out Myth.
Yeah. Which one was that?
It was a kind of an RTS. It was more of a, I guess, real-time tactics kind of thing.
Yeah.
They had like deformable terrain. It was great. You had little dwarves that threw these bombs that blew up the terrain.
They've done a few weird things. And Halo was the very original Halo was a lot like Myth. It was going to be an RTS game.
Yeah, but then what Halo as it was released is a lot like Marathon, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
You've got an AI companion, you're going to terminals, the info, and yeah.
That was a bad guy AI in that one. And
oh, in Marathon?
Didn't have a companion.
All right. I've never played Marathon.
They're hard to go back to.
Yeah. All right, that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Dan. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Evil. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful, evil. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful.
Power. Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.